Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, uniquely formulated wipes for first responders to reduce the risk. We're proud to welcome Haas Alert, connected safety for our roads. Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service. EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. 911lifestyle.com. First responder burnout prevention and improved health. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force may dispatch right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you here with us. My guest today is a returning guest, one of our most successful guests that we've had. And this is Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson from the Pearland, Texas Fire Department. And we are so proud and so happy to have the chief back with us again. His insights are just so spot on for the fire service today. And again, makes no difference whether it's career, volunteer, part pay. It's the philosophy that we take to be in this fire service and how serious it means to us. And Chief Johnson is just that kind of guy that we need in our corner to spur us on to do the best that we can do. So he'll be with us in just a few moments. If you enjoy this podcast and you want to listen to some more, well, you can watch all the videos that we've done since a little after the pandemic started on our channel on YouTube. Channel is the same name as our company, the numeral 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. And for the audios, well, you can find them on our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And across the horizontal menu, select on podcast. And that will take you to our library of over 200 episodes. Now, we really hope that you enjoy those and you want to listen to them and you like them. And while you're there, by the way, on our website, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. It only comes out about four times a year. We don't send spam. We don't give away or sell your email addresses. We'll have one coming out in the next couple of weeks or so for the spring season, if you want to call it that. And should you ever wish to unsubscribe, just send an email to us at the address dalmatprod@outlook.com with the word unsubscribe in the subject line, and we'll make sure to take you off right away. Now, a lot of you, like us on Facebook, and boy, those numbers keep rising. Thank you, thank you, thank you is all we can say. We need your help. We'd love to have your support, and it's great to have you with us. We really do appreciate it. Now, many platforms that you listen to the audio version on, and I'm going to tell you just a few that we're on. We've counted now 13. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Odyssey, Google Podcasts, Boomplay, Deezer, Podbay, TuneIn, Podchaser, PodToppin, and others as well. But what's really important is that most of those provide you with the opportunity of either leaving a star review, the number of stars, or a sentence or two. And that's very important, not just for us at Five Alarm Task Force, but for all podcasters, because the hosts, these platforms that you use, have an algorithm they use when someone does a search. And if you don't have good star ratings or good comments, then you wind up down in the lower bowels of the search results. However, if you have good star ratings, and you don't need a lot of them, you just need to have a few good star ratings and some good comments, well, you're going to come up higher on that list of when someone's searching for your podcast or our podcast. So please, while we ask you, take a moment or two and either leave a star rating or a couple of sentences. And please don't forget, we welcome constructive criticism. And if that needs to be put there, then please do so. But again, we want to be constructive criticism so that we know that we're bringing you the products and the guests that you're interested in. And really, that's the business for this morning. So we'll be right back right after these words with our guest, Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, in just a few moments. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training LLC? Well, here's part of their upcoming schedule. Yavapai College, UAS Thermography Training on May the 4th. Insight Training LLC instructor Andy Starnes will be providing a six-hour training to Yavapai College Fire Science Program in Prescott, Arizona on UAS Thermography on May the 4th, 2023. This program has been specifically designed to address the use of the thermal imaging in UAS for first responders. This program can be delivered in person or via a live webinar. The objectives covered in this course are defining and understanding UAS thermography, defining and understanding the types of thermal imaging cameras in use, thermal imaging contraindications, understanding the key attributes of thermal imaging for UAS, application modes, understanding context and color palette selection, overview of fire and emergency services, which include building fires, wildland firefighting, hazardous material incidents, lost person incidents, USAR, and more. Examples and case study information. Coming up May 10th through the 12th at the Charleston Coliseum and Convention Center, welcome to 2023 Expo. The West Virginia Public Safety Expo is an annual event in Charleston, West Virginia, that gives public safety officials an opportunity to network, obtain training, and enhance their skills in a centralized location with some of the best sources in the country. In 2012, the expo saw approximately 500 participants over the course of 5 days. The Public Safety Expo was created in 2008 by a group of public safety officials from various agencies within Kanawha County. Members of the Expo Committee are appointed by their agencies and serve as volunteers. Since public safety officials who volunteer their time operate the Expo, keeping costs as low as possible while maximizing training opportunities is the goal. And finally, on May the 16th, Insight Training will offer the following program customized to the department's specific request with the James City County Fire Department. Based on the top three choices submitted to Insight Training for thermal imaging cameras testing, Insight Training will offer a presentation explaining the advantages and disadvantages of each TIC in a classroom session 2.5 hours in duration. Once the classroom session is completed, the students will be informed of their expectations, provided a lesson plan grading matrix, and escorted through a series of objective-based evolutions. They will then trade each tick during a max firebox, followed by a live fire demonstration. This training will be 8 hours in duration. Remember, be sure to check the website InsightTrainingLLC.com or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for tick training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built the path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 Key Attributes of the Well-Rounded Firefighter, and 6 Tips to Guide the New Fire Officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.firehousetribune.com or email us at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Services, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. But like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan Wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello, and if you're watching the video, welcome to this episode of 5-Alum Task Force. If you've been listening to the audio, welcome back. I'm Steve Green, the host of the show, and it is my real pleasure to welcome back our guest today. I actually had correct another note on my paper here, but I had written down Battalion Chief Jacob Johnson, because last time the chief and I spoke, it was back in the end of 2021. And he's been a little busy since then, because he recently was promoted to the assistant chief of the Pearland Fire Department in Texas. I suppose you know a couple of those Lone Star Law heroes, huh?
Oh, yes, sir, we do.
Yeah, there's some great people there. I love watching the show. I hope they're bringing, we want to see more of them, that coming back. So, Chief, it's number one, it's a pleasure and honor to have you back with us. It's been quite a while. And for our new listeners and viewers who hadn't have a chance to listen to those podcasts or watch them, would you please give them a little bit of your own personal background?
Sure, absolutely. So, as you were saying, I got, I have just under 23 years on the job. It'll be 23 years on June 9th of this year. I started out as a volunteer member, just like most of the fire service, I believe, with Katy Volunteer Fire Department. I started at 15 years old with their junior department and moved up. I worked there as well on the duty crew and on the ambulance, and eventually came over to Pearland in 2007. And I was one of the original 18 members ever hired in Pearland. And man, the last 16 years now has just been a whirlwind, and we have grown. I have gone from firefighter to now being appointed to assistant chief. And we've gone from 18 firefighters to just under 135 with 180 total in the department. So 180 total members. So rapid growth and rapid change and lots of leadership lessons learned along the way and lots of failures to be learned from, you know, to make sure they don't happen again in the past and make us better leaders. And it also comes with a lot of challenges and trials and tribulations that we had to go through, you know. But one thing that I found is that mentoring and teaching the young of our job is a true passion of mine. And, you know, so I always like to say that firefighting is my passion and being a fireman is my ultimate dream. But, you know, seeing others succeed and mentoring them and providing a path for them to have the career that they deserve and desire is my ultimate goal and why. As the mayor likes to say here in Pearland, is what is your why? And that is my why. So, you know, we sit here today and this is our fourth time. I love speaking with you and I look forward to a great talk.
Well, as do we as well. And you have a wonderful family as well. I understand now your son is really into his youth football.
And, oh, yeah.
And dad, I guess, is coaching. So I heard.
Yes. Yes. So I coach the offensive and defensive line. He's real, real big into it. You know, he just turned 11 last Thursday. He's already 5'7" and size 10 and a half shoe. So he's a monster. And I got him right up here on the different pictures.
Sure.
So this year we went 11-1 and we won the championship game. And so one of those pictures up there is me and him with our Turf Bowl rings. And it was just a magical season. So we start swim team next week and we'll swim for the next 62 days straight. And then we go right back into tackle football. So it's he is by far my greatest accomplishment.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And let's just tell the listeners and viewers where Pearland is in the, I know it's in the greater, you know, Metro Dallas Fort Worth area, but can you shrink it down the focus a little bit? For our
we're actually in the Houston metro area.
Oh, Houston. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we border Houston. So the Beltway is a big loop around the city of Houston, and we cover half of the Beltway and Houston covers the other half. So we're right in between Houston and Galveston on the coast with the Gulf of Mexico. So we're about 32 miles from the water and we border the southern limits of Houston. So we're just kind of plucked right in the middle there. And we're one of the largest cities around outside of Houston, and we are the second largest fully career paid fire department in this area.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we've talked about your growth on those other podcasts when you were my guest, and I'm amazed, but what I'm thrilled to see is that your numbers are good for your staff. And
yes, sir.
You know, today it's very challenging. We all know, both in the career and the volunteer departments, there's, you know, retention is very difficult. Recruitment, yeah, you get a lot of people who want to be recruits, but they don't necessarily know whether or not they can be firefighters.
Right.
So I think that the fact that you are this successful at your department and continue to be since you and I first met on the podcast, I think speaks a lot of both, not only the leadership, but the people who have come to Pearland. To me, I think you offer a down-home career department that has the makings to be as good as any big city around it. And yet people still feel the comfort level of being in and giving to small town America.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you bring that up because we do feel that way. You know, we do have a good culture here, and that's because the men and women in this fire department, Steve, are some of the best. And I truly mean that. I know that everybody says it, but when I tell you that they're the best that I've ever met, yeah, I truly mean that from my heart. The men and women that drive this fire department and operations and our code and health and our fire marshals and our training division, they are what drive our culture. And just under a year ago, 11 months ago, we got a new fire chief, and he has come in here. His name is Jay Taylor. He comes from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and he has come in here and has just taken our culture and flipped it 180 degrees and has made us better.
Jason Taylor?
No, sir. Jay Taylor.
Oh, Jack? Yeah. Okay. I think he may have been a guest on the podcast. I was referred to maybe from Irving Fire or something like that.
Yeah, he's from Irving. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So yep. I think, all right. So we got connected to Irving, Texas, after they had the terrible accident when the Attila was destroyed in a struck by situation.
Right.
And yes, so I had the chief on a couple of times, and besides his own podcast, we had him on a roundtable podcast. And then he set me up with Jack. I think we're talking about health and wellness in firefighters as well. So, so it's it's amazing what a small world it can be, whether it's in the fire service or just in the United States at all. It's great.
Absolutely. He has come and he has embodied our culture and he has enhanced it tenfold. And that is what drives our recruiting and our retention. People want to work here because of the people that work here. You know, and I tell everybody when they come through as a new hire, you know, we have our own academy here, right? Our new hire academy for probie school. And I get them for one morning by myself and we do a light workout, but it's more or less a time for me to be able to talk to them. And, you know, we talk about a lot, but the one thing that I tell them is this. I say, look, I said, right here behind this fire field, there's a neighborhood. And I said, I want you to pick a rooftop and I want you to look at it. And I want you to understand that there's a mom or a dad that is in that house right now that are drinking their coffee. A baby's watching Mickey Mouse Club. They got a husband or a wife at work. They got an older kid, son or daughter at school. And I said, they have expectations. They have expectations that if that house catches on fire, that we will come and we will save that mom or that dad and that baby watching Mickey Mouse Club. We will save that house. And then so when that mom or dad comes home from work or when that son or daughter comes home from school, they come home to a family and they come home to a house and they come home to their things because we did our job, because they have expectations of us when they leave that home. And I said, we have to understand that we have to meet those expectations and that here in Pearland, we are the elite of the elite. And that is our mindset. There is no one that is going to outwork us. There is no one that's going to outtrain. There's no one that's going to outperform us because we are it. We are the elite of the elite. And that is the mindset that we have going forward. And I think that has really been built in me through the last 16 years of saying we are it and we have to meet these expectations and we will be the best because we have no other reason not to be the best. And we have to be elite in all of our work. And I think that has driven over the years, not from me, but from all the members that come in and embody that culture. And that has led to huge wins in the recruiting and retention world.
I'm sure because you need to, it's got to be more than just about the money.
Right.
The people, you have to provide people with a sense of fulfillment, a sense of purpose. Just as exactly what you were talking about for Pearland is that this is what they bring and you and the administration brings the same idea that the workers are coming in with. Is that we want to be the best that we can be. We all know that there's a risk involved, but we want to be the best of that. That mom and dad, and that's underneath that roof, just behind the firehouse, can know that if they have an emergency and they call 911, the best of the best are going to show up and take care of them to the very best of their ability.
That's right. 100%. We have to be able to guarantee that. Right. Because there are so many factors in this job that we simply cannot control. We cannot control when the call comes in. We cannot control the situation we're walking into. We cannot control what happens before we get there. But what we can control is our preparation, our mindset, our response, and our attentiveness to the citizens. And we have to make sure that we're on point on those things, because outside of that, it really is up for grabs on what we can control. And so we have to make sure that in our realm and in our minds and in our bodies and in our preparation that we are ready to roll at a moment's notice so that we can give our best foot forward to every citizen out there.
How many stations does Pearland have now?
So we have 6 right now. We have one on a bond election. That'll be 7. coming up. And then we have one that we're buying property for right now. That'll be Firehouse 8. And then we'll eventually, over the span of the rest of my career, we'll top out at 10 houses.
Wow. That is amazing. So I take it that growth is just blossoming where you are.
Exponential. We have gone from about 82,000 citizens in 2007 to 135 in the city, with 162, including the ETJ that we have that we cover. So we have doubled in 16 years, and they expect that we'll be hitting the 200 to 225 mark by the end of 2029, 2030. So, I mean, within the next 7-8 years, they're looking at going up another 60,000-70,000 people. With that has come massive development infrastructure. Firehouse 7, that's currently on the bond for us. If that passes, that area, that district alone, has somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,500 rooftops coming to it in the next 24 months or so, along with several businesses and multi-story apartments and multi-story healthcare facilities. So that district in itself is going to blossom well before we worry about Firehouse 6, which is District 6, which we're trying to buy land for, which would be our 8th firehouse, along with Firehouse 9 and 10. So huge potential out here. We have an Ivy District coming in behind the Bass Pro, which is going to be a massive commercial place with hotels and restaurants and office complexes. So lots in our future, lots to prepare for. And it just continuously proves that we have to keep in our mindset of doing the best and being the elite.
Right. Very true. And growth, Florida, a lot of it's South Florida, but the growth here is also exponential. We're seeing it. They say it's still one of the highest number of new residents on a daily basis in the country. I just not sure if we're meeting the infrastructure needs as well as we can. But luckily, the firehouse down the street, Station 64, which is less, maybe just a quarter mile from my home, is getting a new station. They're just about finished now. They'll have their dedication, I'd say, in the next 4 to 6 weeks. They've given them a great job. They're a great group of people down at this station and at the main central station and fire headquarters with our chief and the training officers who I've been in. Involved with as of recently for one of the tools that we gave them to try out. And I think one of the things that you and I that really connected us when we first met back in April of 2021 is, as you mentioned at the beginning, the concept of education, ongoing education, and being teachers. That number one, we are never too old to learn.
Right.
Number two, we're never too old to teach. And sometimes we have to say we're never too young to teach, because, right. Hey, and even in my crazy religious career, I was asked to start teaching my classmates when I was 13 years old, 2 months after my own bar mitzvah, because I did so well, they wanted me to help tutor some of my classmates. Well, that was 1965. And and been teaching ever since. And so, what rings true for you is the phrase that you shared on social media. You've shared it on your podcast with us and on your own podcast, because I heard a couple of those. And let's talk about that phrase and what brought you to do that. And also the humbling moment you had. And, you know, a lot of people who have been officers, been appointed officers, have had humbling moments, but don't want to admit to them because that makes me look weak, and I can't look weak. I have to be He-Man the Magnificent all the time. But you know what? We're human, and we use pencils because they have erasers on the end, because we make mistakes. And those erasers are there so we can erase the error and fix it and make it right. So let's start with that, please, Chief, of what was you were promoted into your first level of being an officer, and yet you had a humbling moment subsequent to that.
Absolutely. So, you know, the phrase you're talking about is do your damn job. And that started because of a massive leadership failure that I had as a young company officer. And, you know, that moment was, it was a young man who ultimately lost his job. And so what the story is, a real quick story is, this young man came to me with very little experience, and, his first day he shows up in the firehouse and, you know, he brings his store-bought cake and his party pail ice cream. So, you know, being from Texas and being an hour from the Bluebell factory, the headquarters, everybody knows to bring Bluebell. Well, he didn't. And so I grabbed that and I said, hey, you know what? You're a rookie. You're a probie. You have to understand that in these firehouses, we eat Bluebell and we bake our own cakes. And I threw them both away in the trash right in front of his face, you know, first day. And, you know, so looking back at it, what kind of impression did I give him right off the bat is like, your first day is not important. And it's the exact opposite of that. It's the biggest moment of their career, you know, and I stole that from him. I ruined it. And so we go into to mentoring and teaching and training and signing off on his rookie book, on his phase testing, and he's just not getting it. And I'm getting frustrated because my other two rookies got it real fast and they were real successful. And, you know, I'm putting in effort and why aren't you picking this up? You know, you went to fire school, you should be picking this up. And it eventually came down to him coming to my office and he said, hey, I'm having trouble with hose handling. Can you help me? And I told him, I said, I've taught you everything that I know. You should be handling the hose well. I guess you just need to gain weight. And I said, you know, he said, okay, you know, and he took that advice so serious, Steve, that he went and got weight gainer powder and he started taking weight gainer shakes and he got so sick from them that he actually lost weight. And so then we fast forward, you know, 4, 5, 6 months down the road and I'm just done with this kid, you know, like he's not going to cut it, but he's not a terrible kid. So we just need to get him checked off so he can move on. He's going to be a 20-year pipeman and then or firefighter and we're going to go down the road. And so I just pencil whipped his book, you know, full disclosure, I pencil whipped it, signed him off. He's cleared. Right. And so we soaked him with the hydrant. We gave him his hydrant wrench, which is a longstanding tradition that I've always had as a company officer. And we celebrated him and then we moved him on and he went to another shift with another supervisor. And about 6 months after that, the supervisor called me and said, hey, you know, this kid just doesn't have it. Like he's not good. And I don't understand what the deal is. Like some things he's really good at, some things he's not picking up. You know, what was your experience? And I just told him, I said, I did everything I could with the kid. I said, he's not going to be anything other than a firefighter for his career. He's not going to be one that promotes. He's not going to be one that wants to promote. You know, I just signed his book so he could move on in his career and get stuff started. We'll eventually get him there, was my thought process. And, about a month after that, this kid came to me and said, hey, I need help, filling out my performance improvement plan. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, he said, I'm not cutting it. And they're putting me on a performance improvement plan for lack of knowledge, skills, and ability. And you're the best officer. I want to hone in on that. You're the best officer that I've ever worked for. So I want your help in writing this PIP. And that's when it hit me. Like that's when the light bulb went off was if I was the best officer that he had ever worked for, then why is he on a PIP within the first 18 months of his career? You know, if I was the best officer of his career, if I was the best that he had ever been with, why is he having all these struggles? Why does he lack the knowledge, skills, and abilities? And what it came down to was me, is I failed him as the officer. I was not his best officer. I was his worst officer. I didn't give him the knowledge, skills, and ability he needed to be successful. I didn't allow him to have an opportunity to have a love affair with this job. I didn't provide a path to a career that he desired and deserved. And so ultimately he went on to PIP, he got terminated, and he went on to join the military where he sits today now as an E6. He's back in Colorado now from Japan. He's a recruiter over there. He is married now to a girl that he met in Japan and living a great life. You know, we still talk quite often. you know, it is all due to the fact that I had to have a real life moment and look at myself in the mirror and say, you are a complete and utter disaster of a company officer. You are a loser. You are the definition of what a bad officer is, and you need to fix yourself right now. And I had to have that moment with me. You know, and the one thing, Steve, that I like to tell people is don't take my story and say, like, on a Tuesday, Jacob was a bad officer, and on a Wednesday, he was the perfect officer. No. On a Wednesday, Jacob was a bad officer, and on a Thursday, he was a good officer. No, I was not. This was a light bulb moment, but you have to think back about everything that I had to process of what have I done good? What have I done bad? What do I need to stop right now? What do I need to improve on? You know, because I had two successful rookies that looked at me and said, you're a great officer. So how do I justify that versus what happened with this kid? And it's been a whirlwind battle for the last 11 years. And I sit here today with you, and I still know something that I have to deal with each and every day of my career. As long as I'm employed with the Pearland Fire Department, I have to deal with the fact of this, that there's always going to be people in this fire department that judge me on 2012, 2011, 2013, Jacob, and not the growth from there to now. They're not going to judge me on what Assistant Chief Johnson does. They're always going to judge me on what Lieutenant Johnson does. And so it is my daily penance, pretty much, that I have to continue to be consistent in my efforts and consistent in my message and consistent in treating people like human beings in order to overcome those judgments from over 10, 12 years ago.
And that's always the challenge, trying to overcome an image that we've grown out of, but some people just won't forget.
Right. Yep. And it's a daily struggle. It racks my brain every day, you know, because it's a disappointment.
I understand that. You know, when I got my first job as an education director, I had already been teaching for 10 years. So I thought, okay, this is my big step off. And I didn't know anything about pedagogical studies and how to teach along those lines. And luckily that the synagogue I worked at, which also was the one that afforded me the opportunity, because being in the joining a volunteer fire department. But once they provided me with a course that was arranged up in New York by the head of the education department in our group, I just ate it up. And, you know, I knew that I was becoming a better teacher, and I even developed a new methodology for training these boys and girls for their bar bat mitzvah that made more sense than what I was trying to shove down their throat, as opposed to giving them the opportunity of learning it, not just facing them that you have to memorize everything I give you and come back with it the next week. You can't. Right. I felt like an idiot, you know, because I had been so crass and thinking that I was, you know, the best teacher. And there I was, 26 years old, something like that, 25, 26 years old. And it was also my lesson. And I've made sure over the years since then, you know, in the 50 years since then, to make sure that I teach in the same way that I would want to be taught.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thrilled that I have two adult classes that I've been teaching now for going on 3 and 4 years for each of them. And I still have private students that I teach. And this whole methodology that I created, and I had published in our journal way back in the late 70s, that went across the country. And I know that there are other synagogues that still use it. And it was just founded in, after I started learning about being a teacher, as opposed to thinking I was a teacher.
Yep.
Then I came up with this process to help make the kids, their learning, a little bit easier for them.
Absolutely.
Smaller bites. You can still get full in your dinner. You don't have to eat it all in one gulp. So you take smaller bites, pass it around, and then you get to learn more. And that's what I've been doing since. So I know exactly what you're talking about, because I was in the same place, just in a different career. And it is something that we have to look back on every once in a while and say, have I really continued to evolve for the better even since then? You know, yeah, I know I did it for a while. Am I still there, or have I let myself slip? Because that can be a problem also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that's part of that constant evaluation that I was talking about, is like, when I made the change and I started investing in people and I started investing in their lives and I started doing what my parents raised me to do, I started doing what I did as at the rank of firefighter and driver, right? And I started reliving all that, right? And I can vividly remember a rookie that came in, Brian Perkins, who now is a lieutenant for us. I was a firefighter. I was the senior man. He was a rookie, and I sat him down on the bumper on his first day, and we had a long talk, and I worked with him, and I invested in him, and I invested in his family to where he's still sending me pictures of his kids that, you know, one is in the military and in Japan right now, and one is graduating high school, and you know, I invested in him, but it was like for that little 2 to 3 years, I got so arrogant and I got so cocky and I got so unlike me and unlike how my parents raised me that I became somebody I didn't know. Right. And even with everything going on in my life, from losing my daughter to having struggles in my personal life, I allowed all of that to change who I was at work. And that's where my ultimate failure started. And so when I handle all of that and I become the person that I'm supposed to be and the person that my parents raised, there's still moments where it's like, man, did I do that right? There's still moments of like, oh, man, did I do that the way it's supposed to be done? Just last night, I had a conversation and it didn't go like I wanted it to go. So I have to call today and I have to apologize and I have to correct that right now today. I have to fix exactly what went wrong or what was said different or what wasn't understood correctly, because that's who I am. And it's not about living this mantra. It's about being a good human being and realizing that people around you are human beings and they need to be treated as such. And so I'm constantly evaluating, making sure that I stay consistent, making sure that I stay correct, because that's what's going to eventually, hopefully, take some of the people that still hold judging me from 2011 and 13 and 12 and all of that, those 2 or 3 little years, hopefully that will get them to start to change and say, well, now I'm starting to see that growth, you know, that Lieutenant Johnson has been working on up until now where he sits as assistant chief.
You know, you kind of ring the bell and the memories of two of our great leaders, Chief Bruno and Bobby Halton.
I appreciate that.
You share that passion about the people, not the job. It's right. The people, because without those people, we don't have a job.
That's exactly right. We don't.
We're just robots that are just going through motions. And we, the leaders, have to know that we have to teach them to teach. That's what we have to do, because that way they grow with every knot they tie, with every pull they make on a 35 footer, whatever lugging they're pulling, bringing those axes and bringing the K-12 up to the roof on a rope after they've someone tied them up below. Every pull is building who they are as a firefighter, but as a person as well. And
yes, sir.
I think one of the things we talked about way back when was the egos that some instructors or leaders get, and then you can never break them from it. And they see that anything you're trying to do is a personal attack, where you had great people like Chief Bruno and Chief Bobby, and we have thank God Billy Goldfeder today, and so many more who are of that ilk. John Vance, they're just on list after list of great leaders in the fire service today. And if we don't make those efforts, we will not have the caliber of people that we need. And then we can't serve the public.
Exactly right.
We can't serve the public. You know, you can't have 50 employees, but only 25 do the work.
That's right.
Can't work that way. And that's when your phrase kicks in. Because if you're on the job then you have to do your damn job.
That's right. Yes, but sir.
Go ahead.
No, you're right. And that's where it comes down for me is, you know, at that point in my career, I had to remind myself that I have to do my job. I have to do my damn job. And I got so mad at myself that's why I threw that word damn in there. And because it's so much more than just do your job. It's supposed to bleed passion, and it's supposed to bleed profusely in your heart that, like, damn it, do your job, Jacob. Like, why did this happen? Why did I allow myself to fail? How did I allow myself to change who I was? Because you're exactly right. You're hitting the nail on the head. It is exactly about the people. And if we are not investing in people as human beings, then we have nothing. And this whole job is about being good human beings and doing good things for other people, for other human beings. And, you know, it's the first thing I sit down with people that report to me, and they're like, what are your expectations? And I said, it's simple. I have one: be a good human being. Because if you were a good human being, that means that you will be right in moral decisions and in character. You'll be right in your integrity. You will make sure that your job gets done, that all expectations are met. Just be a good human being and treat other people as though they exist. Give them the career that they deserve. Because you know what? I'm telling you right now, Stephen, I know I've told you before, and I'll say it till the day I die. I sit here today, and if God stood before me and said, you have to go or somebody else on the job, I would say take me 100% hands down, because my career has been amazing. It has been phenomenal. All the ups and all the downs, I don't regret a single one of them, because they have all built me and made me better. And somebody that doesn't have the time that I have, they deserve that. So take me, so that way that person can build their career like I did and have what they deserve, so they can get the fulfillment that I've gotten out of this job for the last 20 plus years.
That's a great way of putting it. And I hope that the viewers and listeners will take a moment after they listen to the whole videocast and podcast and ask themselves, number one, do I really care about this job? Number two, am I really? And the first thing you have to ask is that person in the mirror. And I've said this, just like you said a gazillion times, I've said this, my dad taught that to me, may rest in peace. And because that person in the mirror knows every secret that you have and knows the answer to every question that you have. But the difference is, when they answer you, they come back with the truth. They don't make up stories. So when you have to ask yourself, can you look in the mirror, and will that person say, you have been doing great, you've worked hard at this job, you give yourself, you offer to help whenever you can, you offer to bring somebody, even if you're just someone just a year behind you, you offer to guide them or help them with something. That's the, if you get those answers back from the person in the mirror, then you are doing what you're talking about. But you have to be willing to self-evaluate. This isn't just about your superiors and your officers. This is about, can you admit truth to yourself?
That's right. Yeah, you have to be able to have that moment. You have to look at that person in the mirror, and you have to understand that the trumpets on your chest or on your collar are just as important as the firefighter scramble on the chest and the collar of those below you, and that those trumpets don't mean anything unless there's a good human being with good intent that fills the shirt that they're on, you know. And that's why we have to always self-evaluate. That's why we always have to ask ourselves, is there something I can get better at? How can I get better at it? Is there a conversation that didn't go the way I wanted it to, and how can I make it better? How can I make up for it right now? Is there things that I can do in my life and in my career right now to just get 1% better every day? You know, I just got that meme from my buddy Rob Ramirez down in South Florida from where you're at. I think y'all have talked before. But he said, Jacob, just get 1% better every day. You know, because I was talking about a few things that I'm doing, and he sent me that. He said, just get 1% better every day. He says, if you get 1.01% better over 365 days, you will end up 37% 0.1% better over that year. But if you do 0.99% better every day, you wind up at just 3.6% better over the year. So he said, look at the difference between that 0.2%. It's 34% different. And he said, so just get 1% better every day. And it blew my mind to see it in paper, you know, and it's like, okay, I needed that yesterday. So now what can I do today to make that meme come true? You know, so little things like that always happen and you need to respect them and you need to truly look into them and make the change if there is one needed.
Very true. Very true. All right, folks, we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, the chief will be joining us. We'll be talking about more about his philosophy and how he shares his passion with the people that he's now supervising. You know, I did not know until we logged in together this morning before we started the podcast that he had been promoted to assistant chief. And I'm thrilled by it because from the moment I met him online back in April of 2021, I knew this guy was going places in the fire service. And I'm glad that that prognostication of mine was right. So we'll be right back with our guest, Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their task to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
The physical and mental demands of a firefighter place major stress on our minds and body, and especially our heart. Far too many of our brothers and sisters in the fire and emergency service are lost each year due to cardiac arrest. In fact, statistics show that those of us active in this profession are much more susceptible to cardiac arrest than the general population. Too often, ignoring the warning signs is a fatal decision. Your body will definitely be signaling to you that something is wrong, a feeling that you have never had before. If you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. Seek medical attention immediately. If someone under your command or in your unit is not feeling well, don't send them home. Don't send them to the bunk hall. Insist they get checked immediately. Let's change the culture in our profession, in our departments, of ignoring the warning signs our bodies are telling us. Visit IAFC.org to learn how.
This message is brought to you by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and this podcaster.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hello, and welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green, and our guest today is Assistant Chief. I'm so glad to say those words. Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson from the Pearland, Texas Fire Department. And Jason in segment, Jacob in the first, my son-in-law is Jason. Jacob has been sharing with us his own his own adventure when he joined the fire service at 15 as a young, I don't know, not cadet, but rookie or young rookie or teen firefighter.
Yeah.
And it's been going on nearly 20 years since that time. And here he is today as an assistant chief of this department that's growing by leaps and bounds and bulges at north, south, east, and west, and every corner in between. So I asked him in this segment if we would talk a little bit more about his philosophy. We talked about this great phrase that he came up with. And then, by the way, folks, I'm going to be honest with you. Even though he'd been on three times before, I didn't realize that he coined that phrase for himself initially. And maybe I didn't listen well enough in those three other podcasts, those three interviews, but I heard it today. And he was looking in the mirror when he said, do your damn job. So, Chief, with that being said, and with the move up, your promotion, and now you have a different view of the workings of the department, because you're now in administration. You know, you still maybe get out and catch a call here or there. It's a good call, but it's not, you know, even when you were in the buggy, it was, you know, once every shift, you know, you're in the buggy and your day's off, stuff like that. Now it's totally different. And how have you seen the personnel and the people that coming to Pearland, how have you seen that change over the last 10 to 15 years, especially when so many, as we mentioned also in the first segment, so many other departments are losing people. They're bleeding, personnel power, and they're trying to think of everything they can to bring them in. And yet Pearland is growing by leaps and bounds on its own. Now, I'm sure there's promotion stuff going on, but it doesn't sound like you're having, I think the only problem you guys may have is you're not getting enough people fast enough because you're growing, your stations are growing and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So to hit back on the first part, every chief in this admin building is a firefighter. I can tell you that. So when a box alarm comes in, yeah, we're busting at the seams to see who's going to get there, right? So we can go and assist the commander and just be a support service support member for him or her who's running the scene. So it is nice to see that, you know, you have five admin chiefs here and we still are firefighters at heart. So we're always busting out. You know, you still have that deep-seated need to go to the fire and try to help where you can. So, but talking about our growth and what makes us different, you know, I think it's two different aspects. Excuse me. I think one is absolutely the men and women who work here and the culture that they have. Just like we talked in the first segment, I think they are our biggest recruiters. They know that we treat people like family and that we truly mean that. They know that we do family days up here quite often, that we just did an Easter egg hunt the Saturday before Easter for all the family members. And it was pouring down rain. We couldn't do it outside. So we opened up admin and we did it inside the admin building. So there was eggs in my office. There was eggs in the chief's office. There was eggs everywhere. And the kids got to run around and collect eggs and get prizes. We do a formal banquet every year. We do gatherings at the big city events, such as the Christmas tree lighting or the trick or treat trail or July 4th celebration. So we're always involving our family. A lot of our crews, it was started by Captain Ryan on the B shift. When they work 48-96, 2 days on, 4 days off. So when they work a Saturday, Sunday tour, that Sunday is family day. And all the families for all the firefighters come up to the firehouse. They have lunch. They do bubbles and sidewalk chalk and let the kids play basketball. Or if it's during a holiday, they'll do like a Christmas gift opening or an Easter egg hunt themselves in the firehouse. So they do that. And when people hear about that, they want that, right? You want that in your career. You want to work for a fire department that is a true fire department that believes in the traditions of the firehouse, that believes in the traditions of the kitchen table and embodies every sense of that culture. And it's supported from the command staff down, right? So every morning at admin, it is mandatory that all the chiefs sit at the coffee table in the kitchen from 7:30 in the morning to about 8:30 in the morning, and we drink coffee together, and anybody in the fire department's invited to join us. And we sit there, and sometimes we'll have 15, 20 people in there talking. Sometimes it's just three or four. But we're there every morning at the kitchen table, just like you're going to see in a firehouse, and we're just shooting the bull, man. You know, it's a no rank hour. We talk about everything from sports to hunting to fishing to job related questions to things that we have to get done that day. But that is our hour to just sit and drink coffee and enjoy each other's company. So, you know, if an engine company or truck company comes through and they're going to training, they'll always stop in the kitchen, say hello, sit with us for a second. Then they head off to their class. So it's something that they want. You know, firefighters want that in their career. And the second aspect of it is the support from our city. Our city council and our city managers and the staff and everybody from the city level has always had our back. And I mean that as true as it can be. If it comes down to pay, they're always trying to find a way to stay competitive, and they've never let us down. When it comes to equipment we need, they respect that. We justify it. They try to get it. They do what they can to support it. When it comes down to doing standards of cover surveys or strategic plans, they support it. They approve it through our budget, and we get it done. When it comes down to needing new air packs or state-of-the-art equipment or something that is going to keep us safe with all the carcinogens and having to do with the cancer initiative, such as saunas in our firehouses, they find a way to get it done, and they fully support it. And so when you're a firefighter out there and you're hearing the men and women of this department, of this elite department, tell you, like, if you come to Pearland, you're going to go through probie school and you're going to be treated as a member of the family, and you're going to have to earn your spot, but understand that we're going to help you earn that spot. We're going to show you how to earn that spot. When we talk about expectations, we're not just going to hand you a page of paper to sign and read over. We're going to show you our expectations that match that paper I give you. When you go to admin, you're going to see the command staff sitting around the kitchen table, and we want you to join us. So when you start to hear about all of that on top of what the city does, I think that's what drives us in our recruitment and our retention. I think that's what makes us elite. I think that's what makes us being able to hire so many and keep so many and not have that turnover rate that you see nationwide happening with other fire departments.
That's so important. I remember, I think it was either the second or third season of the podcast, we wanted to address, we did a roundtable on addressing the difficulties in the volunteer segment. And I said, it's about, you know, recruitment and retention. And I don't know if you've spoken with him or heard him, but Chief Anthony Correa, great EMS chief and mm-hmm. fire chief in Jersey. And he said to me on the phone call, he goes, Steve, got to understand, it's got to be retention and recruitment. He says, because if you can't keep your people, you're not going to be able to bring anybody new in. He says, your people that you retain are your best salespeople. And I said,
yep.
You know what, Chief? I'd never looked at it that way. You're absolutely right. You can't do recruitment and retention because you got to keep your people who are with you and keep them happy, keep them involved. Keep them charged up for doing the job that they wanted to do when they joined in the first place. But if you don't have them,
100%.
If you don't have them, then they're going to say, don't even think about going to that department because it was terrible there. I wound up leaving after 8 months because it was so bad. Man, somebody hears that. That's poison going through veins, one to the other, to the other, to the other. Because none of these people are going looking on their own, talking about fire department. They're all shopping around. Everybody wants to know what's going on at this department. Is this a good one? Is that a guy? So if you don't take care of the people you have, how are you going to attract anybody new in? And yet what you've explained,
exactly.
This admin morning thing, and we had something, it wasn't official, but it was similar in my first department. And I really loved that department. I really was sorry that we were moving out of the community because I didn't even know it until I left there in 81, and I didn't learn until 2017 that I was being groomed. My buddy and I were being groomed to be officers on the volunteer side. Mm-hmm. And we had been sent to the State Fire College for 3 summers running, but we had no idea why. And so I was able to get back to North Carolina back in 2017. And I didn't even know the chief was still alive, but I was thrilled to hear it. So I went to his house. I knew where he lived, same old house where he had been there before. And he said to me in that drawl of his, "Mr. Green, did you ever wonder why I sent you and Mr. Bray to the State Fire College those three years? I said, "Oh, yeah, Chief, we've talked about it maybe a gazillion times. Like anytime we're together, we talk about it." He goes, "I was grooming you boys. I saw the leadership that you boys had. I saw your dedication to this department, how much you wanted to learn. You were hungry to learn. You came in Saturdays, Sundays, evenings, even if you already were working, you came over here afterwards." He says, "I knew you boys were going to be good officer material for us." He goes, "I'm just sorry that we lost you both before, you know, before we had the chance to make it happen." And I had no idea, but that department, we had one of the day caretakers was our mentor. He took us under his wing. And every time we were there, if he was on duty, he always made sure to spend time with us. If he was off duty, he'd come down and meet us there. And that's why, and this young kid, I met him that night. He was 18 years old. He's still my best friend today, nearly 50 years later, and he left the fire service to go into law enforcement, but he got into helicopters. He paid his own way to learn how to fly helicopters. And then he's been chief pilot at one of the counties here in Florida for over 20 years. And wow. President of the Airborne Law Enforcement Officers Group, and a teacher and instructor in Raider all over the country. And this was this young kid who I didn't think was going to, you know, amount to anything. I figured he was just a young 18-year-old kid, all eat up with it, and he'd burn out. And yep. He is not only that, but as a man, he's a great guy. All in all, family man, just a wonderful person. And sometimes we don't look deep enough into the people who come to us, especially people who come to us for maybe with no fire background, but they have this little interest, that spark burning in them. And we have to know, we know as firefighters, you have to be firefighter. Go back to your earth science class. If you take a small ember and you're surrounded with other little flammable pieces of paper or twigs like that, little blowing, fanning, and you can get a nice little fire out of it. On the other hand, if you just drop that ember down on a rock and wait for something to happen, it'll happen fast and it'll be nothing.
That's right.
So we have to be the ones that make things happen to bring people into us. Absolutely. As you said, that your employees are more than employees, they're ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
They are your, not to coin a Disney word, but they are your ambassadors to the public.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And they're the first line, because they're the first ones the public sees most of the time. And again, whether it's taking care of Mrs. Smith's cat, as the late Chief Bruno taught us to always take care of Mrs. Smith, even if her worst day is only her cat up a tree to us, it's a terrible day for her. So that's part of what I see that Pearland is giving to your members. And that's why they're your ambassadors, because they love what they're doing and they love with whom they're doing it.
Yep, exactly. And that's, you know, a short story about something like that is something that's so simple is, you know, we have code enforcement and health enforcement that are underneath the fire department here. Something that most fire departments don't have is to have that division under you, under the umbrella of the fire department. And so when I came here, they're assigned to me as an assistant chief. And, you know, I'm trying to get involved in it, trying to learn a lot about that job because I don't know anything. And one day I noticed that they're putting on sunscreen. And I said, "Hey, why are you putting on sunscreen? I see it every day, just wanting to know." And long and short of it was, you know, they're outside all day, but they don't have any window tint on their trucks. And so their trucks heat up. And then when they're doing their reports in their trucks, the sun's beating on them. And, you know, they're just trying to protect themselves. And I said, "Why don't you have tint on your trucks?" And, you know, it was a long story and I don't want to get into that side of it. But at the end of the day, it took one day and less than $1,000 to get all seven vehicles fully tinted. And I got it done. And if you would have seen the look on their faces, right? And I walk in every day to their office and I walk into all the offices and admin. I say, "Today's going to be a great day. It's going to be a great day." and you bring that, you start investing in those people like that. Well, let's fast forward now 8 months, and we're looking for a senior code officer to take a role from a member who had retired. And guess what? They were reaching out. The code officers were reaching out to people saying, hey, it's completely different. We're not forgotten about. We're not the stepchild of the fire department. Like, we need good people. Come and apply. And we had some absolute stellar people apply. And we found one heck of a guy that comes with all kinds of experience, all the stuff we need to really ramp up the health side of our division, and everything that we were looking for in a candidate. And that is strictly because of inside recruiting by the people themselves that reached out to other people and said, come work for Pearline. And that's as honest and as true as it can get when it comes to retention and recruitment. Is you took time to invest in the people that are here investing in you. You made their life worth coming to work. And now they're inviting somebody that's worth it to come into the family. So that is the epitome of what you want when you talk about retention and recruitment.
Right. And so if for you listeners and viewers, if your department is in that situation where you're down on personnel and you need more, and whether it's, firefighting side of it, or maybe it's your you need inspectors, fire inspectors. I know even in my second department up in upstate New York, when my knee blew out again and I had to stop active duty, I figured that was going to be the end of it. But the chief said, hey, listen, I know how much you cared about it. And they let me do the video unit for them. And they said, I would like to be the fire inspector for the village. I said, what? He says, yeah, I would like to be the fire inspector. He says, we'll put you through a couple of classes. But you work with a judge at the village court, who I knew already from our synagogue. He was a member of the synagogue. And he said, yeah. And, I said, well, only if I don't want to get paid for it. He goes, well, we weren't planning on it, but I'm glad that you said that. I said, no, this is a volunteer. I want to volunteer, and it's important to me to be a volunteer. It has meaning for me to do it. And so I did. I went to classes, got my little gold badge, and started doing, I had my little video store back then, but I had other firefighters working for me, because I hired a couple of them to work with me from my department. And I made it happen. And I felt part of it again. Because once the doctor said, Steve, you can't go back to active firefighting. I can't let you do it with that knee messed up, because it's going to happen again. And that was after three surgeries on that one knee already. So I didn't have a choice. So I asked my wife, I said, would you mind? Because I do this on my own hours. I don't, it's one of the things I love about watching. We talked about before we start recording on Lone Star Law. And what I love about what they're allowed to do there is they make their own schedules. They don't have to take work. You're going to work the 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. shift. No, you can work 4 hours, take an hour break at home, and then come back out for 6-7 hours and work a night operation like that. And I said, well, why can't we try to set that up along the same way that the people, I was being offered this opportunity that I didn't have to keep hours. They just want me to do my job. Mm-hmm. And that job was my book, my ticket book, my violation book. And I wasn't a pig about it, because I thought an educational moment is worth more than any citation I could give somebody. Because if you give them the citation, even if they shake your hand after, they still paint your guts afterwards for a little bit. But if I can say, look, normally I would give you a citation, but this is, if you can do this for me and I'll come back in 5 days, we'll just let it go and do that. And so I kind of thought I was the only one doing it. So I started watching Lone Star Law, because I think that's such a great way. And I hope that we can see that. And I think it does in many smaller communities carry over to the police service, law enforcement as well. And we have been doing it. That's kind of like a natural thing in the fire service, is to help and do whatever we can. There was just a great video on Instagram over the weekend. An engine company was driving by this gentleman saw him. He was 95 years old. He was out there trying to mow his lawn with an old push mower. And mm-hmm. and they pulled the apparatus over to the side of the road. They came out. One guy jumped on the mower. Another guy jumped on the rake. And within 20 minutes, they had his whole yard done for him. Yeah. That's who we are.
That's right.
He didn't call them for an emergency. There wasn't a fire or a medical issue. They came back in their community and said, hey, we got to help this guy. He's one of ours.
Yep. We have to find every opportunity we can to grab a hold of the moment, make that impact. And whether that's in the community, whether it's in our own department, whether it's in our own lives, or from that moment of looking in the mirror, is grabbing a hold of that opportunity, taking the moment, making the impact, and being something to someone. And even if it's just a sounding board, or even if it's just a moment of motivation, or in your example, if it's that mentoring approach that you take, our health and code officers take that mentoring approach every day of like, here is the statute, here's the city ordinance, here's the law. You are going to be held to this, but here's what you can do to get there. And I will work with you, and we will do regular check-ins, and we will get you to this before we just go out and start writing citations. And it's those moments, man, that make the biggest impact. And if everybody had that attitude, I definitely within the fire service, but in life in general, I think that we would see a much more caring, giving, loving type atmosphere in society that holds people accountable in the right way than they do today, where you just want to try to cover it up and not hold them accountable. And then when it's time, you drop the hammer and then you ruin everything that you've ever tried to build.
Right.
But you know, that consistent accountability and mentoring is what's going to make a better impact and going to make a better person, a better employee, a better firefighter in general, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The only two things I ever got hard-nosed about as an inspector was my very first weekend after I'd been appointed, was the weekend that Ghostbusters broke in the theaters.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I got a call at about 8:45 that Friday night that said, we have people sitting in the aisles and on the stage and stuff like that at the movie theater.
Oh, wow.
And I was already kind of changed, relaxing. I didn't expect to call it to the movies at that time. But I had to, tell them that they had to stop the showing and then empty the theater. And only people with stubs were going to get back in, because they oversold it by nearly 100 tickets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was one. And the other one was the guy who I ticketed once for parking in a fire lane, right across the street. It was a fire at a small strip plaza right across the street from the firehouse, and gave him a ticket because the hydrant was there, and I wrote him a ticket. And so we had a fire in the back of the drugstore, the pharmacy there. And he was, what do you know, that he was parked there again, but I didn't give him a citation this time. I gave him something better to remember. We put the feeder line from the, right through. We took out the two back windows, put the feeder line right through it.
Yeah. Hey, so, see?
Hey, I had given him a chance. He was parking right where it says no parking the first time. You know, he came out and he says, well, I was only in there for 10 minutes. I said, well, that's 10 minutes too long. He goes, well, it's just the fire lane. And I said, if your wife and kid were in that store and the fire erupted, would it still just be a fire lane to you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, don't do it again, but you're going to get a citation, but I'm giving you the lowest level of the citation. Okay, thanks. I thought I had educated him.
Yeah.
Thought I'd been nice to him. But you can't please everybody all the time.
No, you can't. It's impossible.
So when you have to do something like one of those two, then you have to do it, because that's who you're supposed to be as well. You want to be nice to everybody and polite, which is, there are very few cases where we don't have to be that way. Very few, I think. But you also have to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And my job required me to do those two, take those two actions. But the very fact that what you're talking about, your people, and one of the things, I'm not sure if we brought it up during our previous interviews, but I have always said that every firefighter should be part of the fire prevention team. I don't mean just by answering fires. I'm saying, but have a couple of have a couple of flyers in your back pocket, especially when you make the run to the market to buy the food for lunch and dinner for that shift.
Mm-hmm.
A little kid comes up to you with his mom or dad and says, I are you a fireman? Yeah. And goes, hey, how would you like one of our little badge decals? And here's for mom and dad. This is a little home safety thing we can give to them. If we did that,
that's right.
No matter the size of your department, I don't care if it's New York, LA, or Pearland, or a 9-person in small department in North Dakota or Montana, we can, each of us can be an ambassador of our department to the public, the people.
Oh, yeah. Serve. And it's expected. I mean, we have to be that way. You know, I mean, we do a very good job of that in Pearland, of doing all the PR events and going to the big city celebrations. But we also take it a step further, and we have a smoke alarm installation program, and we carry plastic helmets and badges and stickers and coloring books on all apparatus. And so when they go to the grocery store, we keep somebody in the truck. So if a kid or a parent walks up and wants to see the truck, there's somebody there to open the door. We bring all that supplies in with us when we grocery shop. So if we do run into a situation like that, we can hand the kids stuff. So there's always that opportunity to make an impact. There's always that opportunity to provide a little bit of knowledge about fire prevention. And there's always an opportunity to continue to invest in the citizens and let them know that we're here and we're responsive and we're active and we're going to be there for them when they need us.
Right. So let's get ready to finish up here. But I want to close with asking you to give some of the most important advice. If you had to sit down, if you were at a major conference and your room was full of chiefs, assistant chiefs, full chiefs, deputy chiefs, I'm going to leave the battalions out of this for now, but the deputies, the assistants, and the chiefs in the room, what would be maybe the top three items you try to impart to them to take home to their own departments?
So I think there's one thing that I can say that would sum up all three. And it's that you can provide all the materialistic things that you want to your firefighters on the street and in admin and all of your divisions. You can buy the best of the best apparatus. You can buy the latest and greatest tools. You can buy the latest and greatest equipment. You can literally purchase anything materialistic and give it to those firefighters in your career as a chief, but you will only be remembered at how you treated people. So no matter what you buy materialistic, no matter what you do to provide an apparatus for them to respond on, no matter what, if you are a bad human being and you treat them poorly, you will never be remembered for the materialistic things. You will always be remembered for how you treated them.
That's a great, great way of thinking. It really is, my friend. I can't believe that the time has gone already so fast.
Yeah, it's quick.
it's a pleasure to talk with you. Hearing about it, your son's 11 years old already. I remember the first picture you showed me of him in our first interview, and playing football and.
Yeah.
And your promotion. I'm just so happy that I reached out to you. It'd been a long time. And I went back and listened. Two of them, one of them was lost with a computer failure, but I went back and listened. And I just knew that. I said, you know what? I got to bring Jacob back if he's available, because you just, pardon me, I'm not meaning to demean you, but for an old fart like me to see a kid like you achieve what you've achieved, I'm damn proud of it.
I really appreciate that, Steve. I love coming on here, and I love chatting with you and hearing the old stories and seeing your passion in you even today, even though you consider yourself an old fart, but seeing the passion in you is something that I strive for. So I absolutely will always make time for you. Whether it's on a podcast, a phone call, email, whatever, because I truly respect you and what you've done for the job, and this is a great way to start out the week for me, especially since I'm acting fire chief and I'm the only one in the building. So I know there's some stress coming, but this is a great way to start it off for me, and and put me in the right path for the week. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I do as well. And we will. We're going to stay in touch. Folks, if you're watching the video, this will wrap that up. Those of you who are listening to the audio version of the podcast, as you know, we'll be right back after a few words. But we want to extend our sincere thanks and appreciation to Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson for taking the time on a rough morning, because he's the acting chief today for the whole department, and spending time with us and sharing his wisdom and his passion with us and his outlook. And I think that anybody who's listening or watching this podcast can learn and grow from what you've heard from Chief Johnson today. And I hope that you'll take it and you'll share what you've learned with others, or share the podcast with them. Let them know about it so they can watch it or listen to it themselves and learn from the chief just as much as I have. Once again today, this is our fourth interview together, and every time I have sat with Chief Johnson, I have learned from him. And I'm not embarrassed to say that, because I still love to learn. Even though I can't be active, I'm still love to learn about this fire service that we love. So, folks, thanks for tuning in. Those of you on the audio side, stay tuned. We'll be back. And to everybody else, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week once again on Fire Alarm Task Force. Thanks. Thanks, folks. Be well and take care of each other. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Fire Alarm Task Force.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your CISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger, put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve. I was really pleased when I was able to book Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson for a spot on the podcast schedule. And I think that even I was surprised with the direction that our conversation took. Maybe it's because Jacob has matured a little bit more since he was promoted to the office of assistant chief. But I also think he grew through his leadership. And that's why we changed the name of the topic today from Do Your Damn Job, which we mentioned, to the idea of humanity in the fire service. Now, that's not a topic we see lots of posts for on social media, how we have to be more human
and care about the people we're with. All too often, the postings we see deal with tactics, and you should have done this, and she should have done that, and et cetera, et cetera. It's always easy to be a couch critic, but when you have to do the job, we have to take and do what it needs to do that job safely and efficiently. But more importantly, we have to have the good people in our departments to do that. And that doesn't mean just hiring the best, but it also means the way we treat them, the way we work with them. Whether you're a line officer or up in the chief's bracket, you still want to deal with your people in the most positive way we can. Now, sure, sometimes discipline is necessary. We can't take that away, and we can't take that out of the equation. But for the most part, especially if we go by some of the postings that we see, that's really not a problem. But we realize also that we are finally taking a look, a closer look, at the inner workings and the interhuman connection with firefighters. We've said it before and we'll say it again. We see crap that we would never want anybody else who wasn't on the job to see. And that takes a toll on us. I don't care what your brave outside shell looks like. A lot of trauma can take a deep and very gripping hold on us. At the same time, we're also dealing with the trials and tribulations of everyday life. In our workplace, in our home, when we go shopping, go to the movies, whatever. We still have to deal with that interhuman connection. But as we talked about retention and recruitment today, and you heard us talk about this with Chief Anthony Correa several months ago, is that if we don't keep the people, the good people that we have, and we don't make them feel good about themselves, then they won't attract new people. But there is the historical perspective, and Chief Correa shared this, is that when you do treat your people well and you retain them so that they want to stay, they can be some of your best ambassadors to the public as you're looking to bring in more career or volunteer or part pay or WUI personnel. Because they will see that you have a vested interest in them being the best that they can be, not only for themselves, but for your community and the department as a whole. So let's try, when we can, to keep the word humanity as part of our day-to-day vocabulary when we're talking about the men and women that we work with. Because without that, if we're just automaton firefighting robots, then we don't really have a department. And I don't care if that's a small little 20-member department or a 2,500-member department. We cannot forget the humanity. And let's remember, we are also finally taking a strong grip and look at the behavioral health issues in the fire service. Just like we did with the cancer initiative. And look where that has gotten us today. Good news is on the horizon. New bunker gear without PFAS. Because we made an issue. Let's make an issue to better treat each other and the people who work for us if you're a supervisor or a leader, or a chief, assistant chief, battalion chief, captain, lieutenant. Let's keep that word humanity in our dealings with the people who we work with, who we work for, and who protect the lives and property of our communities. And that's my view. We want to take a moment to tell you about some other great firefighting podcasts. First, I want to welcome my friend, Chief Arjuna George, who started his new podcast, Beneath the Helmet. You can find it on all major podcast platforms. Also, The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soler, The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune, Station Talk with Nick Higgins and Assistant Chief Tom Marciano, Flow and Vent, The Troubleshooter with Assistant Chief Tom Marciano, DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia Volunteers, Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzow, Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss, Code 3, The Firefighters Podcast, Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy, Fire Rescue Show, Average Jake Firefighter, and Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must always be willing to learn. That's what we do.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Assistant Chief Jacob Johnson, for joining us to discuss humanity in the fire service. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, Hass Alert, Nesta Bars, the EFT Corporation, 911lifestyle.com, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce, on Facebook at facebook.com/5, followed by A as in Apple, T as in Tango, F as in Foxtrot, C as in Charlie. And on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, the 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, a new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.